We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful NYC, my man, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm great. And Ty, I have a connection. This isn't nautically themed to keep with the twos crew.
No?
But before we get to the reverbs, I have a connection that I made in my head to you, to a great passion of yours, and to college football, especially week 12.
Is this a long-distance dedication circa the old Casey Kasem days?
In a way. So, you know how plane crash investigations, which I know you're into.
I'm very into.
Speaking
not
of
in,
the Baylor
not so
offense,
much into the crash, but the investigations.
No, the investigations.
Bit.
We hope no planes go down. We hope everybody stays healthy. We hope nobody loses loved ones. I'm strictly talking about the scientific methods.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how they study pings off of satellite dishes to figure out the last known location? Okay, this pinged off of this. It pinged off of this radar in Poland at this time. Pinged off of this ship in the Arctic Circle. Blah, blah, blah. I've been using that same way of thinking to figure out when you go to sleep on Saturday nights as per when you respond to my text messages about the games going on, to know what you're seeing live in the moment
right,
and what you're watching at like 5:22 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I am 93.5% sure you missed the second half of Baylor-Oklahoma live.
The second half? How about the second quarter, Dan? How about the second quarter?
Because I sent you a string of text message that if you were awake, you 100% would have responded to about the Jalen Hurts and volatility experience of rooting for Oklahoma you're an Oklahoma fan.
Yeah, I'm looking at this now. Nope, just saw these for the first time this morning. Yeah. Welcome back to the show, one and all. I'm Ty, he's Dan.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get into all of the Week 12 action. A lot to discuss. A lot went down, both for the good and the bad here in Week 12.
Yes.
All of that is certainly notable and topic worthy here on the podcast. We also want to remind you that if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, you could do so. Just as we get to the end of the season here, for any new listeners who maybe aren't fully aware of what we do, we record year round. For better or worse, we record year round. We're a college football only podcast. We get weird in the off season, but we continue in the off season. So subscribe now if you haven't already. You can do so anywhere you get your podcasts, be it Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. You've heard me read off this list of places a million times, but please do subscribe. If you like the show and want to give us a star rating or a review, of course, all that stuff helps. But just FYI, and just so everybody knows, even though we're getting towards the end of the season, it doesn't mean we're getting towards the end of the show, at least not, you know, for the foreseeable future.
No.
Also, don't forget to subscribe to to our social feeds as well. You can follow us out there on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. There is also a subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com where you can continue the conversation long after we hit the stop button. Got a teeming community of verballers out there who talk about...
As we're splintering the listener base.
As we're splintering...
completely on Moana and Harry Potter, I believe.
It was definitely a pressure point.
Yeah, it definitely was.
To say the least, shall we just jump right in with those week 12 reverbs?
Oh, I'd love nothing more.
Here it is, folks. You called in at 408-VERBAL-1. You sent messages to thereverbline@gmail.com. Our boy Ryan cut those up. Here you go. Week 12 reverbs.
Hey, guys. It's Nick and Adam in Ann Arbor.
And let me just say,
what can I say except Jim Harbaugh owns Mark D'Antonio?
Hi, this is Jeff from Hong Kong.
What's up, Dan and Ty? This is Myron from Atlanta.
Hey, guys, it's Nathan from Indiana.
Dan, Ty, this is Sean in Parts Unknown.
This is Kathy from Korea.
Hey, Joe here, Fayetteville, Arkansas. With the Hogs on bye, that means they couldn't lose, right?
Dude, I hate to see it. It's almost Thanksgiving. Families are supposed to love each other, take care of one another. You got Michigan out here just beat up on little brother.
Being a middle child, I'm both an older brother and a little brother, so I feel uniquely qualified to tell MSU that they are definitely the little brother here. Go Blue.
This beatdown of the Spartans is, dare I say, borderline ironic.
Hi, this is Mary Kay calling in from Ann Arbor to celebrate scarf season Saturday, and the only thing I have to say to Michigan State is I am Moana.
Hey, can someone check up on Mark D'Antonio? He looked really upset after the game. Oh, that's the way his face always looks?
It is currently 38-3. My Irish are up against the Midshipmen.
Can someone tell me where the hell this was against Michigan?
This game was begging for late game James Franklin, and thankfully, late game James Franklin stayed home today.
Hashtag 9 Windiana is still in play. Indiana played well against Penn State, but it was a tough loss for them. Boys fought hard.
Ohio State has already let Rutgers score a touchdown. Clearly missing Chase Young.
I wanted to remind everybody, if you get invited to play football in Ames, Iowa, you politely decline and keep the integrity of your season. Hook 'em.
Hey, you remember when my Texas Longhorns used to be talked about preseason as a, you know, playoff contender? Possibly. Good times. Good times.
Maybe the Longhorns could just let Sam Ellinger block field goals as well.
Iowa State beats Texas with a last-second field goal. And my favorite thing in college football, watching a field goal kicker run away from the rest of his team after a game-winning kick.
Baylor's up by 28-3 right now. I can't imagine a football team losing a 28-3 lead. That has never happened before. It's inconceivable.
You're a foul one, Alex Grinch. Did you even have a plan?
Calling back again after my last call, and I'm just going to go ahead and say, Boomer Sooner!
The rematch of the 1934 Sugar Bowl between Temple and Tulane lived up to the hype, where Temple took down the Green Wave in front of 10,000 strong at Lincoln Financial Field. Go Owls.
Pitt Panthers saw that snake in the toilet, and just as it was about to strike, they just calmly hit flush. Hail to Pitt.
Pretty sure Pitt played Thursday night against North Carolina. Looks like they're playing again tonight against USC.
Does Dan Rubenstein have a picking against Georgia problem?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. 21-14. Oh, yeah.
Who are you talking to?
Oh, it's Jake from State Prom.
Yeah, Jake from State Prom. He sounds like he's terrible.
Well, he threw 3 touchdowns, so go Dawgs.
Just wondering to myself after Auburn's loss to Georgia, Bo Nix have a little bit of Alex Hornibrook in him?
Man, I've never had my team win a football game and feel like everyone in my watch party just walked out of a funeral. Get well soon, 13. We love you, Tua. Roll Tide forever, man.
I think it's time we start talking to our kids about a bowl-eligible Oregon State.
Are my Utah Utes legitimate playoff contenders?
Oregon won, Utah won. America's nightmare of a Pac-12 team in the playoffs is still alive. Go Ducks.
Somebody forgot to tell PJ Fleck that you can't row the boat through a cornfield.
Alrighty, thank you again. for calling us at 408-VERBAL-1. It's 408-837-2251, which doubles as a signal line. Super secret. If you've got any tips. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Looking back, we had named week 12, what was it, S'more Saturday?
Well, it was S'more Saturday. At one point, it was Slytherin Saturday. At one point, it was Spicy Meatball Saturday. At one point, it was Snake in the Toilet Saturday.
Oh, right. So Snake in the Toilet.
It was a spicy Slytherin Snake in the Toilet Saturday.
Looking back, I think second half scare Saturday feels more appropriate to me.
Okay. It doesn't move me in the same way that Slytherin or Snake in the Toilet does, but it's accurate.
Yeah, because we had a handful of games this weekend that tightened up down the stretch, made for an interesting second half watch. Going to get into all of those, and I think we'll start first with Oklahoma-Baylor.
Okay.
You are correct in saying I didn't see the second half of this until this morning. 34-31.
Yeah.
What was your final score here? Oklahoma wins. If you are a Baylor fan listening to us right now, my hunch is that you're sick to your stomach. You are just sick because they had it, Dan. They had this
they
one.
They did.
They led 28-3 early in the second quarter, 31-10 at half. Almost everything was going Baylor's way. Even when it stopped going their way, they had plenty of chances to win this football game. And Oklahoma just comes out of nowhere. They respond in a big way. 24 unanswered points in the second half. They escape Waco with a 34-31 win. Just a stomach punch if you're a Bears fan today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have big picture thoughts about what this means for, you know, what Oklahoma was able to accomplish, what Baylor wasn't able to accomplish? What were your takeaways emotionally?
Emotionally, my takeaway was
great. Cool. I'm sure Baylor fans are super excited about that.
Baylor fans aren't, but you and I both doubled up on Baylor as our home dog of the week. And my immediate takeaway was, oh, look, another top 40 team that Oklahoma couldn't separate from.
Right. And then how many points did the Sooner defense give up in the second half?
That would be all of zero.
That's pretty good for an Oklahoma defense to give up 0 points and a half against a pretty highly ranked team, in my opinion.
I would agree. I thought the way Alex Grinch put it back together at halftime, came out and blanked Baylor in the second half was very notable. Mm-hmm. I also thought the way that Jalen Hurts responded to this moment was notable. Now, this is a kid who's been in a bunch of high-level contests dating back to his time at Alabama. This is not like a new stage for him.
Yeah.
But he turned the ball
over. New stage for Baylor, by the way.
What's that?
It's a new stage for Baylor.
Oh, new stage for Baylor.
Put away a good team in a big spot on national TV with the big ABC cameras. That's new.
Absolutely new. But for Jalen Hurts, it wasn't so much. What was, though, is him turning the ball over three times, all in critical situations. I was impressed by his ability to pull it back together, to put the offense on his back and lead the Sooners to victory here.
Yes. So Jalen Hurts is that old Homer Simpson alcohol quote. It's, you know, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Sure.
So Jalen Hurts has just an atrocious first half. He was just a tough watch. His footwork's all over the place. He drops the ball on the ground. He throws a bad pick that's returned damn near the entire field. He's the one who actually ends up, you know, back to that quote, taking the DB out of bounds to save a touchdown, at least in that moment. And they get it together. Oklahoma's without CeeDee Lamb, who gets hurt the previous week, didn't pass concussion protocol. They're without Grant Calcaterra. They're starting tight end. So in terms of safety valves, it's a different looking Oklahoma offense. Trey Sermon also out injured, as we know. So Oklahoma has to rely on different game plan, different talent, whatever. And they look like a mess in the first half. I think they only muster one touchdown. They cannot stop Charlie Brewer. The Baylor defense is just swarming them at every turn. And then at halftime, Oklahoma gathers itself. They generate turnovers. Charlie Brewer can't do everything alone. I came away from the second half thinking, not that Baylor necessarily fully gave the game away, but what is this offense?
No.
What is the point? Right. What is the goal of this offense? What is the identity of the Baylor offense? Jamichael Hasty, obviously he drops the ball in the second half, but 3 carries in this game. Charlie Brewer, 17 carries. That goes back to the old Beck Meyer thing. Like, is Charlie Brewer good enough to win a game of this magnitude alone? The answer is no. He's good. He's not good enough to do something like this alone. He needs help. Denzel Mims was good in this game, but I also came away good for Oklahoma, and as soon as Oklahoma got the supposed momentum, even Oklahoma down, what, 31-17?
Wow.
You're seeing it coming from a mile away.
Oh, yeah. I was texting.
You're seeing, yeah.
I was texting with friends who were like, do we jump in on the Oklahoma money line now that they're down 28-3? Are you kidding me? Yeah. How many teams in college football?
The cursed score, 28-3.
Sure, but how many teams in college football would you really say that about and feel confident in? Oklahoma certainly in that conversation. And again, I come back to the defense in the second half. I got the numbers in front of me finally. 103 yards allowed on 5 drives. They forced a fumble and intercepted Charlie Brewer on, again, what could have been a game-winning drive. Not to spend all of our time here talking about this game, but...
No.
You know, Baylor had chances. Oklahoma stepped up in a big way in the second half, and that's why they were able to propel themselves to victory despite being down 31-10 at half, 28-3 earlier in the second quarter.
Would also add, the Baylor defense was on the field the entire second half because of three and outs, because of turnovers. And there's just, if you don't have the type of depth to stay on the field for an entire half like that, it's not going to end well. That's why the 31-17 mark felt pretty bad for Baylor, even up a couple touchdowns. Also, Baylor, these last three games, all tight in the fourth quarter. TCU, West Virginia on the Thursday night, I think it was Thursday or Friday, and Oklahoma, all tight in the fourth quarter. In those three games combined, Baylor has scored 9 points in those three fourth quarters. Hmm. So it is a depth thing. It is 4 quarters thing. We talked about it a few years ago with Michigan State playing a certain amount of time that is less than 4 quarters. Really impressive step forward this year for Baylor, but just not quite on that level yet.
Baylor goes down. They were one of, I guess, 2 unbeatens to go down in week 12. The other was Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota loses 23-19 in Iowa City. Iowa, Dan, came out hot.
They did.
Scored touchdowns on their first 3 drives of the game. Couldn't muster up too much after that, but a 20-6 lead at halftime felt pretty secure if you watched the first half. But again, second half scare Saturday. Minnesota creeps back into this thing. They hold Iowa to just 3 points the rest of the way. They score after half, right after half, and again late in the fourth quarter, and they get a crack at a final drive. The story here, if we want to talk about takeaways, is Minnesota's offensive line, which held together really well most of the season and surprisingly well against Penn State a week ago, could not hold it together against a really good Iowa front. Iowa sacked them 6 times, and I think that controlled the point of attack in a way that Minnesota wasn't used to. What were your general thoughts on this game, Dan?
I mean, for Iowa, coming out and playing good offense against a good team early is new. That's definitely new. I came away impressed by that. And Iowa did everything right to start the game out. And Minnesota, as well as Tanner Morgan played, and he played really well. He had a couple passes batted down, had some drops, so it wasn't fully his fault. But Minnesota couldn't run the ball, and it seemed like Iowa, for the first time, really game-planned well for a good team. It was 100% a letdown spot for Minnesota, which we talked about. Iowa not, I don't think they got in the end zone in the second half, right?
Nope.
That felt about right, and managed to hold on, and largely the Iowa defense, even though they gave up, what, I don't know, a couple touchdowns, 13, 14 points in the second half, they just were swarming both the tackles and the inside of the Minnesota offensive line. AJ Epenesa was all over the place. So a very Iowa win in a spot like this where, like, you get a little bit too high and you have to go to Iowa City, and just, I think Iowa was in the all-black uniforms. It just, it felt like such a trap, which, you know, we're almost always wrong, but we managed to nail this.
And we got this one right, didn't we?
The thing that bummed me out, and this goes back to just my proselytizing. I watched basically all of this game, and then watched the highlights of some halftime show, and it was like, Minnesota comes up just short and are almost certainly out of the playoff conversation. Like,
Here we go.
Minnesota comes up just short, still been a really encouraging and impressive season from the Gophers. The framing just drives me nuts.
Well, when you distill it down into a playoff conversation, I do hear you on that front. And look, Minnesota still controls its own destiny. They're not going to the playoff, but winning the Big Ten West will be a huge deal. A huge deal for that Minnesota program. They still got Northwestern and Wisconsin on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where it goes from here, but by any measure, an incredible season for PJ Fleck.
Yeah.
The Iowa Twitter account, did you happen to see what they tweeted out last night around 7:30? Oh, man, so cold-blooded. So cold-blooded.
What did they show?
Sky U, nah.
I was thinking Row the Nope, but, you know, to each his or her own.
Iowa takes down Minnesota by a 23-19 score. Also sort of a weird backdoor slash front door cover here in that Iowa was favored by 3 at kickoff and Minnesota missed an extra point,
ooh,
which would have been a push.
Yep. Whoops.
Don't have a sound for that one. Okay. Also on Saturday afternoon, bit of another second half scare here. Georgia 21, Auburn 14, pretty much with the exception of the feverish last-ditch fourth quarter effort by Auburn, pretty much the kind of game we expected, wasn't it?
I thought Auburn would win this game in weird ways, and they almost did. Bo Nix near the end of the game made some mistakes. He was the solution and problem all at the same time. Just a struggle for Auburn running the ball. It was another game where Auburn in the first half, first three quarters, just struggles against a good team and then makes it crazy interesting late. Trust me, I'm an expert on rooting against an Auburn team in this situation. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
It's
good for Georgia for holding on. Good for the Georgia student photographer who was released from the hospital
being
trucked in that way and knocked out momentarily. So that's good news all around for Georgia. So first the positive in this game. Great comeback from Auburn to make this a game late. They look like they recover an onside, but they end up get some fingers on the ball before it goes 10 yards, blah, blah, blah. And then Auburn still has chances and doesn't make it. But DeAndre Swift is such a joy. DeAndre Swift is such a friggin' joy to watch. On defense, it was Trevon Walker, who ends up making the play at the end of the game, made plays all over the field during the game. But the Georgia offense is still kind of confounding to me. And this is also giving credit to Auburn's defense. But how tough is it to throw a 50-yard touchdown pass and average 4 or 3 point whatever yards?
3.9.
Auburn's defense is really good, and they got after him. They did a good job of keeping everything in front of him. And there's only so much they can do when they can't move the ball on offense for such extended periods of time and finish drives. But this is just, and maybe you'll have a better corporate term for this, I guess, put a pin in the Georgia offense for when they have to play somebody with a more competent offense that'll force them to score more than 20 points in a game. But I still don't know what to think about their possibilities and their ceiling, even with everything happening around them. And that is worrisome to me because I don't want them to waste a really strong defense and a talent like DeAndre Swift.
Yeah. So to step back through this one for a second.
Yeah.
Georgia led 21-0 after three quarters.
They did, which is great.
Really great.
On the road.
On the road.
Against a rival. Yeah.
Auburn could not get anything going before the fourth quarter. They had 5 3-and-outs. Mm-hmm. No points the first three quarters of this game. Then, of course, they cobbled together a 75-yard drive, then a 57-yard drive. They got down to Georgia's 34-yard line with about 2.5 left, but they couldn't convert on fourth down. Bo Nix had to throw it 50 times. He was also Auburn's leading rusher. His last 5 passes we texted about because they were maybe the 5 worst passes I've seen in college football this year.
That fourth and whatever was fourth.
Very yippy.
Yeah.
Looking passes from Bo Nix. But the defense was very strong for Auburn. Georgia symmetrically not only averaged 3.9 per pass, but 3.9 per rush. as well. Jake Fromm was okay, made some big throws, but very okay. The offense does not have that explosiveness that I think you and I would be more comfortable
DeAndre Swift does.
And DeAndre Swift does, but as a whole.
While watching this game, I was daydreaming about DeAndre Swift in any of like 21 other offenses in this country.
There's a boring quality to the offense. They did get the W on the road, a big win at Auburn. They've got A&M and Georgia Tech. They're going to win those games before the SEC championship game, presumably against LSU. I think LSU...
Where's the A&M game?
A&M game is at home.
Okay.
I think that LSU game is interesting for a number of reasons that we'll discuss in a couple weeks, but...
Yes.
Right now,
LSU has not clinched.
No,
they have not clinched the West, but for a reason that I'm positive we're about to get into, it's looking pretty good.
It is looking pretty good. So Alabama won 38-7. Yeah. 38-7 over Mississippi State. It's not notable because Alabama won. It's notable because they lost Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah. He was injured late in the first half. It was probably going to be his last series at quarterback. They were up 35-7. He goes down. He's writhing in pain. He's screaming into a towel because he's got a dislocated right hip.
Yes.
Which, if it sounds painful, it's very painful. I've had two dislocated shoulders. I'm guessing it's not as painful as a hip, but excruciatingly painful. And especially for a high-level athlete such as Tua, who's got the world in front of him. Now, a lot of that is sort of in question. He's gone for the season. We know that. He's not coming back. They are checking. I didn't see any updates this morning to see if there was also an associated fracture along with the dislocation of his right hip. That, of course, would add some time to his recovery and put more of his future, I think, in question. But, you know, they flew him right away to Birmingham, where they're going to figure out where to go from here, if he needs surgery, to what extent he needs surgery. Mm-hmm. They're going to take good care of him, but it's such a stomach punch to see somebody like that go down. I guess the thing that comes to mind for me, and it's not quite on the same level, but when Jalen Smith got hurt in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State.
Sure.
And so much of his future was in question. Jalen Smith, of course, the former Notre Dame linebacker. It sort of felt the same way. It never rose to the level of a Tua. This is like presumably the first pick of the NFL draft. To see him go down like that, to see comparisons, although it's not a fair comparison to the old Bo Jackson injury.
Right.
It's hard to read that stuff. It's hard to think about that stuff, regardless of whether you're a Bama fan or not. It just sucks.
Yeah, and the comparison to Bo Jackson is because it's a hip, because it's a similar injury, but Bo Jackson dealt with the loss of blood flow to the hip, necrosis, I believe it was, vascular necrosis, which basically meant that a bunch of cells died and he had to get a new hip entirely. So it appears the timetable is long for Tua, but he should be okay if everything goes well with his rehabilitation. We're also, 28 years further medically than Jackson's injury. So hopefully everything is great. It was a total gut punch to lose him, one of college football's absolute top great players. It was a freak thing, and there were arguments about should he have even been in the game at that point with that lead? Should he have even been playing against Mississippi State? The answer to both those questions, to me, is a pronounced yes, of course. Nick Saban talked about they wanted to run 2-minute stuff and get that practice in because obviously Alabama has not had a shot to run through that offense all that often this season. And it's football. Injuries happen. You can't completely rule your life because, oh my God, something bad might happen. We're not going to play him against Mississippi State. His ankle was still going to be wobbly against whoever they played down the road, against Auburn, and no matter what happens in the bowl with the playoff, whatever. You play your best players. I'm positive Tua wanted to play in this game. It would be impossible to say, no, don't go to Starkville and start at quarterback for us, even though you're feeling like you can go. So I think all of that discussion is just, it's TV fluff. It's message board fluff. It's insignificant in this specific case. Freak injury and just, you're right, a total gut punch.
It's a gut punch. And look, he's been playing the first half all year. This is at the end of the first half. He's been playing the first half all year.
You got to play football.
He's been playing the first half all year. Yeah. They most likely would have pulled him in the second half. That's just the way that he's gone about it. He's had some other injury concerns, not just this year, but last year as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I don't blame Saban for playing him. They just lost a big game against LSU. You know how Saban is. He's trying to make the team better. The way to make the team better is to play your best players, to give them more reps. Didn't work out in this case. We wish Tua well. It sucks. Hopefully we'll hear soon on the status of his looming recovery now. And if it is the last time we see him in an Alabama uniform, we do wish him well as he moves on. It will certainly be a tough road to climb to get back.
I think he'll be back. I think he'll be back. Yeah.
All right.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Elsewhere in the SEC, we mentioned the LSU win a couple weeks ago over Alabama. They win 58-37 over Ole Miss. A lot of offense in this game. 714 yards for LSU, but 614 for Ole Miss, Dan. And, you know, Joe Burrow with a big game and Clyde Edwards-Helaire a big game and Ja'Marr Chase with a monster game out wide. But how much should we be concerned that LSU gave up 37 and 614 total yardage to Ole Miss?
Okay, so not a lot, but not a little. I don't know what that amount is.
It's not insignificant, right?
It's not insignificant, and it's another situation of like, let's just put a pin in this. Let's just put a pin in the fact that yes, it was a letdown spot. They are allowed to have a letdown spot, and they're allowed to have a letdown spot in which they win a game by 3 touchdowns on the road, right? Mm-hmm. That is allowed.
Yep.
But you're right. The 600 yards, John Rhys Plumlee ran for over 200. Elijah Moore worked over this secondary more often than not for Ole Miss. And just from what we've seen from previous iterations of Dave Aranda's defense, and I know it's different because of how quickly the offense can score, so they're stressed in a new way, but they seemed out of position. The pass rush just doesn't seem like it's there. Ole Miss has been able to run on basically everybody that they've played, so it's not like an out-of-nowhere, uncharacteristic offensive performance from Ole Miss. But there are hallmarks of recent LSU defenses that don't fully seem like they're there. And we've seen this in years past where we say, well, I don't know if it's a huge concern. They're winning comfortably. And then when LSU has to play Georgia, LSU has to play Clemson, Ohio State, then it's like, well, we kind of saw hints of something. The safeties, Grant Delpit, out of position. These are not things we're used to seeing. And so, again, letdown can be a factor after the biggest win, monkey off your back victory that they've had in a decade. But stick a pin in it. That's all I'm saying.
Stick a pin in it. Well,
does that work? Is that what you would say in an email at the NSA?
I don't think I'd ever say that. No.
Okay. Sorry.
No, but that's okay. LSU's 10-0. They've got Arkansas and A&M before the SEC championship. Mm-hmm. You're right to say they haven't clinched it yet. I think they will, but correct, that's just the state of play right now. 10-0. They put up 58. Joe Burrow, 5 touchdowns. 49 through the air.
Fingers crossed if they can beat Arkansas.
Yeah,
I believe
right,
they'll take it.
By 1,000. Yeah. Florida, 23. Missouri, 6. The first half of this game featured 13 drives and 10 punts, Dan.
Is that bad? That sounds bad.
It is bad. Did you watch this game with Richard Johnson?
No, he watched this solo before he came over. And
good for you.
I watched this a little bit. I was mostly watching Indiana, Penn State, and Michigan State at this time, but flipping back and forth a little and scrubbed through it some more this morning.
This game set offense back about 50 years, at least on the ground, Florida averaged 2.2 per carry. Mizzou, 1.8 per carry.
Yeah.
Not great.
But Florida threw the ball fine. Kyle Trask threw some nice balls. Florida won the moment. Florida lost to this team comfortably last year. There are positives to take away. When I asked Richard about this when he showed up, he said, win's a win, baby.
Yeah.
And you know what? Florida's won 9 games this year without being able to run the ball. Florida's won 9 games behind a defense that gets after it. Florida's defense has been very good this year. And so
10-2 feels likely. And honestly,
yeah,
that's a hell of a year with a backup quarterback.
That is an unbelievable year. If you said Felipe Franks is going to get hurt right away, Kyle Trask is your dude this year, you're going to win 10, maybe 11 games.
I would take that in a heartbeat.
You're going to be top dozen-ish in the country?
I would take that in a heartbeat if I were a Florida fan.
Related, Ty. Related. This is from Greg Tepper of Fox Sports Southwest. I want to give credit where it's due. On Mizzou's last 30 offensive possessions, which I believe is what? Kentucky, Georgia, and Florida. Kentucky. Not an amazing team, not an amazing opponent. Spanning the last 145 minutes of game time. This was at a certain point against Florida. These were their drives. Punt, downs, fumble, punt, end of game, punt, 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 interception, punt, 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 downs, end of game, punt, 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 field goal, punt, 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 field goal, punt, 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 inter-damn-ception.
The dog is barking downstairs. We didn't even plan that.
No. Holy moly. What a year it's been for offenses, either in-game or just overall, falling off of cliffs.
Wow.
Just completely into a void. You know sometimes when the ocean opens up, what is it in Pirates of the Caribbean? Or it's Davy Jones' locker?
Sure.
It's just sinking to the bottom. We've seen it from NC State and Northwestern and all sorts of teams. But Mizzou's offense, the firebrand that is Derek Dooley's offense.
Great head of hair.
Have sunk into the core of the earth to such an extreme level. I almost feel bad for Kelly Bryant. I almost feel bad. I feel bad for the defense.
Let it be noted that the dog has not barked all year.
During the show.
Maybe once during a twos cruise.
Okay.
For a minute. The only other time that happened is when we talked about Missouri's offense. Let the record show. The 100%.
Not even the first time in the last 5 years that we've talked about a Missouri offense falling off a cliff while the defense has been okay.
All right, real quick, elsewhere in the SEC, we had Kentucky by 24 over Vandy. We had A&M by 24 over South Carolina. Of note here, I just got to give props out to Lynn Bowden Jr.
Yeah.
The Cats rush for 401 and 4 touchdowns as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Vandy stinks and all that, but I'm just enjoying the hell out of Kentucky, committing to the bit, building the plane out of Lynn Bowden Jr.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him the keys. They've completely reconstructed their offense. He was 8 of 10 passing in this game, rushed for 110 and a touchdown, and then 2 redshirt freshmen, which is a good sign. Christopher Rodriguez Jr. had 2 touchdowns and over 120. Mm-hmm. And Cavassier Smoke, a great name. I love that name. 15 carries, 95 yards, and a touchdown. So the future is bright on the ground for Kentucky. I love watching Lynn Bowden. I'm glad they won. Good for them. It's been a tough season, but I like the way they've rallied around Bowden Jr.
Yes.
And
LBJ, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Let's be real.
I don't have anything else here to add on the A&M South Carolina game. A&M had 319 on the ground, which was notable to me.
There was a vote of confidence in Will Muschamp before this game.
That's something.
From administrators, and Texas A&M stomped him. Texas A&M is probably the SEC's most okayest, that's not English, team, which is something with their schedule. They've won 7 and might stay. Who do they have next week? I think they have LSU left and they have Georgia. So they might stay at 7.
All right.
But
all right.
Yes, they did a great job, especially on the ground. I think 2 guys went over 100 yards. I'll only watch this game briefly. And you're right about Kentucky, although Vandy is just, I mean, they're in that nightmare category as well.
All right, a lot more to get to. Let's go over to the Big Ten.
I'm just preparing the meat.
That tenderizes it.
That tenderizes it in a big way.
Run,
Michigan 44, Michigan State 10.
Yeah.
This is a good old Midwestern crock potting, excuse me.
Yeah, there are a lot of cheese, some Fritos.
Yep.
And spaghetti inside of a casserole.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mostly scoreless first quarter here.
Mm-hmm.
Sparty strikes first with a touchdown right before the end of the first frame. Make it 7-0. You're flipping through the channels. You're thinking, okay, here we go. In-state rivalry.
Yeah. Well, Michigan, the records out.
Throw them out. Yeah. Michigan answers, but still wasn't until late in the second quarter when Michigan grabbed a lead. They led 17-7 at half. Well, Dan, the crock pot really got nice and toasty at half. Mm-hmm. Michigan outscored Michigan State 27-3 the rest of the way. A season-high 398 and four touchdowns for Shea Patterson through the air. Not much on the ground to speak of for Michigan, but they didn't really have to. On the Michigan State side, Dan, well, before I get into that, any general thoughts on Michigan and how they won this game before I talk about Michigan State losing five straight?
Yeah, it was Shea Patterson's best game as a Wolverine because I still am a believer in Michigan State's defense, at least being impressive in spots above average. There's only so much they can do with the spot the offense puts them in. Shea Patterson was great. I thought Michigan did a really nice job of, I don't know if we want to call it probe and go, figuring out what worked and just steer into it. Does probe and go make you feel uncomfortable?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
The probe is along the lines of moist in terms of uncomfortable words.
Okay. So Michigan's offense got moist as they probed and went. Ronnie Bell, terrific, has emerged as the go-to guy out wide for them. Dependable, even with the end-of-game situation against Penn State. He's been really, really strong for them. And so it was nice for Shea Patterson to find him. I thought Michigan just did a nice job staying ahead of the chains. They generated some chunk plays, but there was a confidence to Shea Patterson in the passing game that we haven't always seen. I thought DPJ was good. He got into the end zone. I thought the Tariq Black, he had like a 25-yard catch or something, flexed his muscles and was called for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Okay.
I didn't see him jawing with the other team. I didn't see any sort of showing up. He flexed his muscles in a garbage call. Otherwise, I mean, how do you come away not super enthusiastic if you're a Michigan fan about beating a rival by 34 heading into, you know, the meat of your schedule, Indiana and Ohio State in Ann Arbor? So I move Michigan closer to Ohio State. Not closer after seeing what they did against Michigan State, especially getting stronger as the game went on.
Michigan State's lost five straight now.
They have.
And, you know, it's been a tough stretch, but underwhelming to say the least. They've got Rutgers and Maryland left, so they probably get the six wins, but just a really bad season for Michigan State. Go back and listen to the Two's Cruise from the, what was it, the Moana theme? That's right.
No, no!
You're going to get one of those per episode, dog.
No!
Go back and listen.
And I made that sound, too.
You didn't make it. You cut that portion of the sound.
Well, I produced that sound.
Making the sound implies you sang it, which I would love to hear if you're...
Prove I didn't.
If you're willing.
Okay, Michigan State.
But we had some commentary on Michigan State and where they go from here. Hopefully it's a different direction because this has not worked the last couple years, but okay. And on the Michigan side, the only final note I have is they've got that big letdown look-ahead sandwich next week.
That sandwich. I'm so hungry. I'm so hungry.
Oh, boy.
It's like the letdown look-ahead trap club sandwich of the decade. On the road in Bloomington next week against Indiana. That, of course, is going to be followed by their biggie at home against Ohio State. But Indiana, for their part, was in that same spot sort of this week on the road at Penn State. They held it together. And this was a close game for most of the fourth quarter. It was 27-24 in favor of Penn State, but... You know, the big story here for me, not just Indiana keeping it close. I think we expected that. They were 7-2 going into this game. But
Indiana's impressive, period.
They're good. They're a good team. Yeah. For me, the big story, especially now on the heels of that Ohio State-Penn State game 1 week from yesterday, Penn State's secondary, man.
Ooh, yeah.
Continues to underperform. And it's not going to get any easier against Justin Fields in Ohio State. Justin Fields has 31 touchdowns and one interception this year. Trust me when I say it is not getting easier from a defensive standpoint a week from now in Columbus, no less.
Right.
So that is something to keep your eye on. I think I saw the early line for Penn State, Ohio State somewhere around 14. I would be inclined to go all in on Ohio State there, just based on what we've seen the last 2 weeks out of that Penn State defense.
You're not wrong. The Penn State defense, so that's the entirety of it. It's not just picking on the secondary here. It's pass rush hasn't been the same. It's linebackers haven't been the same. It's secondary hasn't been the same. It's a lot easier when you're taking on Kenny Pickett. It's a lot easier when you're taking on the Maryland offense, whatever. They tightened up against Indiana after a rough early go, I would say. Peyton Ramsey did a good job. It was mostly shorter stuff after some big stuff early. And they've allowed, over 700 yards these past 2 weeks through the air?
It's a lot, yeah.
KJ Hamler goes down. Was that a kick return he went down on?
Yeah, he went down on a kick return. Took his helmet, didn't let him back in.
Noah Cain doesn't play again. Journey Brown, I thought, was impressive. I thought the offensive line took a nice step forward. Sean Clifford, not super accurate in this game, but he loses his number one receiver, and Indiana did a good enough job. Indiana shot itself in the foot a lot in this game.
They did.
The timeouts, the fake punt was a nightmare in terms of execution. All things told, though, like, Peyton Ramsey had this team in the game. He absolutely had the team in the game, and I think you're right to come away with this, like, okay, you survived your mega letdown look ahead after losing to Minnesota and ahead of Ohio State, but I don't come away any more confident in this Penn State team and its ability to weather, you know, a strong team. I don't know how you can.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So, again, Penn State, good team. 10-2 team, which first-year starting quarterback, dealing with some injuries, all things considered, as long as they don't get fully embarrassed and trucked by Ohio State, if they lose to Ohio State 38-3. It does feel like a step back.
They're not going to lose 38-3, but I don't think they're going to win.
Okay.
And I'd be inclined to go Ohio State minus the points, but we'll talk about that on Thursday.
Correct.
Speaking of Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten here, Ohio State won big by 35 over Rutgers. We had Wisconsin 37-21 over Nebraska. Big game for Jonathan Taylor, tailback. And finally, Northwestern wins by exactly 39 points.
As what, 40-point favorites? 40.5?
At kickoff, it was 38.5.
Oh.
And it bubbled and bobbled around a little bit. Because at one point, you could have grabbed it at 41.5. Mm-hmm. Then it came down to 38.5 at kickoff. There was a 39.5 moment at some point later on Friday evening. So it was all over the place, but just amazing that somebody could figure out exactly the point spread here. 39 points, 45-6 over UMass. Any thoughts here in general about these last three Big Ten games?
Wisconsin and Jonathan Taylor. I think Jonathan Taylor surpassed Herschel Walker in most yards rushing over his first three seasons.
I don't know that, but I know he now has 11 career 200-yard games, which ties him with Ricky Williams, Marcus Allen, and Ron Dayne, which is some pretty
good, exclusive company.
Yeah.
Yes, and has now gone over 200 yards in three consecutive seasons against Nebraska, though I thought Nebraska's offense was fine. They couldn't finish drives. I thought Nebraska actually, I hate it was closer than the final score because they didn't stop Jonathan Taylor. Adrian Martinez, I thought, was encouraging the tip interception, not his fault. It seemed Dedrick Mills ran really well for Nebraska. It was just a matter of finishing for Nebraska.
Yeah,
whereas Wisconsin, they had big plays and they were just more solid overall. But Nebraska moved the ball against this Wisconsin defense.
I wrote down that this was not as big of a mismatch as I expected.
Yeah.
And, of course, Wisconsin won by, two scores? 16 points.
Yeah.
Just felt more even than I expected, especially in the first half. Offensively, the output was the same. I know that can sometimes be misleading, but, I think I'm with you. I was encouraged by this showing for Nebraska, even in defeat.
Yeah. Losing efforts, though, are not going
to
do much for the Huskers, even though Scott Frost, I think, what, he got a 2-year extension?
Through 2026, yes.
for, I assume, recruiting purposes and just a show of confidence that he's their dude. But
is Florida State sniffing around there?
I don't think they had a shot before and he didn't want to go.
I know. All right. Let's move over to the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your Oregon Ducks, your Red Box Bowl defending champions.
Where's my hat? Yep.
Oregon wins 34-6 over Arizona. 333 yards and four touchdowns through the air for your boy Justin Herbert. Is Juwan Johnson now his top target? Have we arrived at this very weird, uncomfortable place?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He is 100% his top target with Jacob Breland out for the year, the tight end. Oregon does not do, and this is crazy nitpicking, because Oregon won by 28 and scored enough on their second play of the game to win this game.
Right.
Oregon struggles a little bit over the middle of the field. Juwan Johnson just has an ability to separate, is physically more dominant than basically any corner he'll face 90% of the time in the Pac-12. Justin Herbert throws a professional football, just his launch angle, or not launch angle, that's baseball, but he has the ability to pull off laser throws, and Juwan Johnson has the ability to pull them in. I hope it persists. I hope it keeps on going. Or the story of this game for Oregon was their defense against they're subbing in Khalil Tate and Grant Gunnell, whatever, for Arizona all the time. The pass defense was terrific. Oregon made big plays all over the place. Still, again, nitpicking, too stubborn for my liking offensively, running not all that well 40 times in this game. Just, you have Justin Herbert, throw the ball. Get him out of there at the half and be happy to win this game. But that's not the way that Oregon's offense is operating. Hard to complain. 28-point win, allowing only six. Nice job.
Oregon seems on a collision course in the Pac-12 with Utah. Utah won by 46 points, 49-3 over UCLA. They gave up a field goal midway through the first quarter.
Mm-hmm. A little sloppy early, yep.
Yeah, and then they just poured it on thanks to a bunch of big plays, a couple long touchdown passes from Tyler Huntley, a couple long TD runs. They forced five UCLA turnovers. I don't know if I quite expected this much of a runaway train, given the fact that UCLA has had such momentum the last couple weeks, but there was never any doubt that Utah was a superior team here. They're now in a position where they've got Arizona and Colorado on the schedule before presumably that Pac-12 championship game against the Oregon Ducks. So I have to keep tabs on the Utes.
By the way, if Utah drops either one of those games, Arizona or Colorado, which seems pretty unlikely at this point, basically USC is going to the
exactly.
championship game, which
exactly.
is just wild, because I think common sense and our knowledge of what we've seen now is Utah is far and away the best team in the Pac-12, but they lost to a USC team on some sloppiness. So,
yep.
Weird life we let, weird world in the Pac-12 South, but I think they'll be fine.
USC 41, Cal 17. Interesting, but I think only because we talked about Cal's success in defending the air raid, which was not so much the case here. A monster game for Keaton Slovis. Goes over 400 yards again, four touchdown passes, no picks. Michael Pittman, 11 grabs, 180 and a touch. A really good offensive showing here for USC. I know Cal's got some of their own issues, but against this defense, specifically, again, which has shown a proclivity to defend the air raid, This is a really impressive showing for them. Nice win.
Helps when Chase Garbers goes down. It was kind of a game when Chase Garbers was in there, even though he wasn't all that successful. Cal ran the ball all right at times, but you're right that, I mean, this game was about USC. This game was about Michael Pittman being, I mean, Laviska Shenault is in the conference, so he's probably not the best receiver in the conference, but in terms of looking at receivers in the Pac-12 and beyond as borderline unguardable, unstoppable, Michael Pittman's in that conversation. He is just that good going up against this secondary with a freshman quarterback. Keaton Slovis, again, he's thrown for what, like 800 yards these past couple weeks?
Yeah.
That's good. USC is a good team at times, and it must be maddening, but at least for my purposes, the Oregon win over USC looks a little bit better right now, right?
For sure, yeah.
So nice win on the weekender. I think this game ended like 45 minutes ago for USC.
All right. Washington State won. There were over 1,000 yards of passing in this game. Anthony Gordon finally in a winning effort, 520 and five touchdowns. Davis Mills, He played for the injured KJ Costello. He had about 500 as well. 49-22 was your final here. And finally,
10 rushing attempts for Stanford in this game.
Yeah.
10 rushing attempts.
It's a different world we're living in, man.
Woo!
And finally, Oregon State. How about this one? Nice win for them. 35-34 over ASU. Oregon State now 5-5. It's a very narrow, almost inconceivable path to get to 6, but...
Who do they have before Oregon? It looks like Wazoo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any way you shake it, one of the better stories in college football right now. And a remarkable coaching job in Corvallis, to say the least, to get him the 5 wins. Yeah. Is he coach of the year in the Pac-12?
Man.
You can make that case.
If they beat Wazoo, I think the case is a lot easier. Mario Cristobal, I thought, has done a really good job, as has Kyle Whittingham. It's hard to say, like, okay, you know, every year Kyle Whittingham in Utah, it's a really good job of that he's done with this Ute team, losing the way they did to USC. I know they didn't play a team in the non-conference portion of their schedule, but the offense has been humming against largely bad teams, but that's what really good teams should be doing. I can't wait to see if we get Utah-Oregon, what that game looks like. I really can't wait to see, because Tyler Huntley is, I think, in all likelihood, been the best quarterback in the conference. So,
okay,
really good job by Kyle Whittingham. But yeah, there's a good case for Jonathan Smith, and there's a good case that whoever decided on that 2-point conversion for ASU, don't know if you saw this, I don't know if it was the running back freelancing, but it was one of the uglier plays you'll see in college football this year. And Oregon State, you're right, just a good story, spreading the ball around. We've talked about Isaiah Hodgins, the receiver, but Jake Luton has done a very impressive job for the Beavs. They beat up on bad teams, so that's pretty good.
All right, over in the Big 12, it was a close weekend all around. It wasn't just the Oklahoma-Baylor game, which was decided by 3 points. We had a 2-point win for Iowa State, a 4-point upset win by West Virginia over K-State on the road, and a 2-point win for TCU, 33-31 over Texas Tech. Let me start, though, with the Iowa State win.
Yes.
The Clones kick a 36-yarder? 36-yarder, yes. As time expired. As time expired.
Yeah.
Texas gets its fourth L of the year. Iowa State led 20-7 going into the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But again, second half scare. Texas scores quickly. They pull within 6. They score again with just 5 minutes left. They grab a narrow 21-20 lead. But then Brock Purdy, it's not Brocktober anymore, but he still went to work. 9 plays, 63 yards in 3 minutes. They kick the game-winning field goal. 23-21, Iowa State beats Texas, Dan.
Yeah, after Texas jumps offside previously in another game-winning field goal attempt. It was a game of Texas mistakes, and it was a game of Iowa State, especially on the ground, taking advantage, making plays. We saw the big Brock Purdy touchdown pass, I think it was early in the second half, under pressure, is able to escape, and was it to Deshante Jones? I believe it was, for a long touchdown. And for as good as Sam Ellinger can be, was a lot of shorter stuff once again. Iowa State did a nice job defending Texas. And no running game to speak of for Texas. And we saw that big step forward last week and just couldn't keep it going. And again, Breece Hall, Catalina Breece, Breece Lightning, I've seen in places.
I like Breece Lightning best.
Catalina Breece is a reference to a show that 7 people listening have seen, and I'm going to stand by it.
Okay.
But I would say every game comes down to it, and they're now bowl eligible, have a chance to finish 8-4?
Yep.
Iowa State finishes with, I have it in front of me, Kansas State, KSU on the road. Cats go down, as you mentioned, to West Virginia. Jarrett Daigie in at quarterback. The younger brother of Seth. He is quite good in this game, makes another, scramble, big play, wide open receiver.
Yeah.
West Virginia is able to pull it out. Too many mistakes from Kansas State. Just mental errors and not able to get much going on the ground, which a K-State team that can't get much going on the ground is probably a K-State team who's going to struggle to win.
They struggled.
Even against bad West Virginia.
I mentioned the TCU win over Texas Tech. Won't spend too much time on this, but again, more with the theme, TCU led by, 21 early in the second quarter, but Texas Tech battled back. Good game for Max Duggan. They need
good
a win
for Jet Duffy in a losing effort.
And Jet Duffy in a losing effort. TCU needs a win over Oklahoma or West Virginia if they want to get the six and become bowl eligible. Not going to happen for Texas Tech this year. And finally, in the Big 12.
Are you positive that's going to not going to happen for Texas Tech?
I don't
think
it's
going to happen. Kansas State and Texas?
I don't
think it's. These are beatable teams.
I don't think it's happening for Tech.
These aren't impossible wins. Okay. By the way, Texas Tech, another team with Alan Bowman going down early, because we talk about Peyton Ramsey stepping in, even though he started last year, as starter. Kyle Trask stepping in as starter early. Jet Duffy has done a really nice job. This season's results are definitely not on his ability.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, Oklahoma State 31-13 over Kansas. They led 31-0 going into the fourth quarter. Excuse me. Nice game for Chuba Hubbard and Dylan Stoner for the Pokes.
Yep.
Finally, in the ACC, we had Clemson.
Woo-hoo.
Clemson.
Woo-hoo.
Got murdered.
52-3 over hashtag consider wake. Jamie Newman, the leader of that Wake Forest offense, which isn't it's not high powered per se, but they score points. They're competent, right?
Wake should finish 9-3. They finish with Duke and Syracuse. Shout out to Syracuse for getting on the ACC win column board. Yes, this is an above average, somewhat impressive Wake offense against some down ACC opponents.
Now that Clemson is officially a playoff team, at least according to the latest batch of rankings, they decided to show off their playoff skills here. 52-3, Jamie Newman held to 6 of 14 passing for 41 yards and 2 touchdowns on the day. Again, a completely decent Wake Forest offense held to just 105 total yards, Dan.
Wake down their best receiver, if not, an all-ACC performer in Sage Surratt. It was Wake 5 first downs, 2 of 13 on third down. I admit that I did not watch much of this game because it was, 28-3, 31-3 at halftime.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a ton of second half Clemson to really figure out, okay, this is what Clemson looks like now. Clemson's incredible. They're doing great. They've poured it on. Hard to fully know what we have in this Clemson team because of the ACC in 2019, both in terms of changes and teams falling off cliffs. I see you, NC State. But Clemson looks scary.
They look really good. I'm going to lump Notre Dame in here.
Okay.
Notre Dame 52-20 over Navy.
Wasn't even that close.
No, they did what I was hoping they'd do.
Yeah.
I wanted more downfield stuff. I said Chase Claypool was a matchup disadvantage. I'm not telling people things they don't know, but Notre Dame needed to do a better job getting him the ball. Well, they did. He had 117 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it, that's what happens. They destroyed Navy in this game. 4 fumbles from Navy. Notre Dame has Boston College and Stanford left, probably to get to 10-2. The only other notable here I have is that it was the first time since 1973 that Notre Dame did not sell out a home game, if you can believe that.
I did see that.
Yeah.
How did Ian Book look to you? Obviously, it's an overmatched Navy secondary, Navy defense against a Notre Dame offense when humming is impressive.
I thought he looked really good.
Okay.
He looked really good in this football game. So
did not watch a second of this.
No. Okay. Florida State 49, Alabama State 12. Florida State gets bowl eligible, I guess, is the most notable factoid here.
Virginia Tech has a quarterback. I know it's Georgia Tech, but Hendon Hooker is good. And so good for the Hokies. It was a balanced win. It was a dominant win over Georgia Tech. I mentioned Syracuse getting onto the winning side of things in the ACC standings. Louisville, Mekelle Cunningham.
Hell yeah.
Mekelle Cunningham is one of just the season's quietest breakouts. And he is not going to be quiet for that much longer because I think Louisville is going to keep improving so long as they can hold on to Scott Satterfield.
Yep.
They're going to keep developing. They're going to keep hiring well, assistant-wise. Mekelle Cunningham is, I think, we'll see. I mean, they have a ways to go to be competitive.
Mekelle!
Thank you. Like Clemson. But he was great once again. Tutu Atwell, really good for Louisville. And I am excited to see if Louisville can keep ascending. Pitt wins in overtime Thursday night. This was a snake in the toilet game for me. I thought North Carolina had a good shot, and they really closed it out strong, as North Carolina just does every week. They show nothing for a quarter or two and then come on strong at the end. But Kenny Pickett and Jacques-Louis?
That was good.
For Pitt?
That was very authentic sounding.
Thank you very much. He has a long touchdown and leads the way for the Pitt receiving corps, a Pitt team that is still in it.
Still in it for the
Coastal.
They are, very much so. And North Carolina, for their part, by the way, they're at 4-6, but they have Mercer and NC State to get the 6 wins. I feel pretty good, certainly about Mercer, but NC State right now and North Carolina feel like ships passing in the night, maybe going in different directions.
I think so.
I like Mac Brown's chances to get the 6 wins, which would really be a revelation in year one. Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, we had conversations after a week or two, like 8-win Mac?
Yep.
8-win Mac?
Not anymore, but 6-win Mac would be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to see North Carolina just maybe score a touchdown each quarter.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
What did we leave out? Give me a quick run through here. Anything we missed?
I thought Boise State did a tremendous job with a third string quarterback, and I want to say his name is Jalen Henderson. I don't have it in front of me right now. I apologize, but he throws for 3 touchdowns in a comfortable Boise win over, I believe it was New Mexico, who Boise played. Utah State with a nice win over Wyoming. You know I'm a Mountain West stan, so here let's talk about the Mountain West for a little while. Utah State has been a struggle, but they're still, I think, at 5-1 in the conference. San Diego State with a nice win over Fresno State, and we talked about how we wish this game just had bigger stakes, but Fresno State's season has dictated that it does not. Cincinnati has to come back against South Florida, and it's really good that they did. They finished the season with, I think, a couple big, it's Temple and Memphis. I'm loading this right now to confirm. Correct, Memphis on the road. So good for Cincy to hold on to get to 9-1. A nice performance from South Florida in a losing effort. Elsewhere, I think Louisiana has Louisiana Lafayette? I know. They beat South Alabama, who's not that good, but they go to 5-1 in the Sun Belt. Air Force. I don't know if you caught the end and saw the stakes of Air Force Colorado State.
Oh, yeah.
So Colorado State, a 10.5-point dog. They're down 10, knocking on the door, either on the one, inside the one, 1.5, whatever it is. They throw a 99-yard pick 6.
Unbelievable.
And lose in heartbreaking fashion for anybody who had the Rams plus 10.5. So the very impressive season from Air Force continues. So they comfortably beat in-state Colorado State. I'm trying to think if there was anything. Rice won a game.
All right.
Rice won a game. They beat Middle Tennessee. Other results. Hawaii to 7 wins. We saw this is a phrase of the day. We saw the cliff that Hawaii fell off, very appropriately, because there are lots of cliffs that go into water in their fine state. They beat UNLV on the road. Been a really rough year for the Rebels. The MAC is just completely all over the place, and that's fine with me. I don't know. We do want to do dudes. We mentioned the Northwestern over UMass. I just want to make sure Army just destroyed VMI. App State very quietly keeps on winning. They dropped nearly 60 against Georgia State. I just don't want to leave anybody out, Ty. This is inclusive. Oh, I do want to mention that Dartmouth lost.
I know, the Mouthies.
The Mouthies go down to the other Nellies. Shout out Andy Bernard. Yes, Ty, let's mention some dudes.
All right, give me dudes for week 12.
All right, quickly, Tyler Huntley, Connor Asali. I know it's not pronounced like that, but still. Oh, by the way, the Iowa State kicker, Connor Asali, he may have broken his collarbone celebrating.
Oh.
I hope not.
Pulled the old Grammatica.
Like he was injured celebrating, yes.
Okay.
John Reese Plumley in a losing effort. T. Higgins was nothing but end zone. Shea Patterson, I want to shout out. And also A.J. Epinesa, just cupping up huge for Iowa.
Sure.
There are many more dudes. We'll talk about them perhaps on the Twos Cruise. If you need to know what the Twos Cruise is, we don't just do recaps and previews. We will see you, if you are somehow new to the show, we'll see you Tuesday morning, bright and early, to discuss big picture topics within the sport.
Bright and early, Tuesday morning, drops at 6 a.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m., mm-hmm. 3 a.m., excuse me, Pacific.
Yeah.
We will be back talking, as Dan said, big picture stuff. We also have our preview show for week 13, big week 13 mm-hmm. in front of us here. We will drop that show on Thursday morning. If you like the show, what's the rule? Subscribe to the show.
Yeah,
you can do
amazing.
So on that. Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, TuneIn, any of the usual hotspots. All that stuff counts. All that stuff helps us out. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, as well as on the subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com. We also have merch that is always available, which you can find at solidverbal.com/store. Or if you want, just go on out to the website, solidverbal.com. It's our website. All of our old stuff is there. You can click around. Not only can you click on the shop link, but you can also click on a form and send us whatever is on your mind. That comes through to solidverbal@gmail.com. I think I covered everything there, Dan.
Well, Lehigh got embarrassed by the creddies of Sacred Heart. Colgate gets to 500 in the Pat League.
Whoa.
4-8 overall, but they get to 500 in the Pat League, shutting out Lafayette and Easton. I thought you were going to go, but apparently you did not.
No,
Holy Cross is the class of the Pat League. They take down Fordham in a bit of a shootout. Holy Cross scored 35 points in the fourth quarter of this game.
Wow.
And Georgetown, which looked, you started the season out pretty impressively, they go down to Bucknell in your favorite PA town of Lewisburg, PA.
Lewisburg, PA. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to everyone for hanging with us here as we talked all things week 12. As Dan said, we'll be back on Tuesday morning for the Tues Cruise. Set sail again for college football parts unknown. And please do tell friends about the Solid Verbal. I know we're coming down the stretch run here, but we've got a bowl pick 'em pool, which we're excited about. It should be a lot of fun. People get into it. We're going to get into playoff and bowl season and all that good stuff as we make the final turn here for home, heading into Thanksgiving week, the holidays, and of course, the new year and the playoffs. So we hope you'll be there with us as we continue on this college football journey. In the meantime, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, and myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you all on Tuesday. Stay solid.
Peace.